Hello everybody and welcome to the Last Word on Tennis podcast. I know this time of the year feels like a little bit of a lull in the tennis calendar with such a big gap between the Australian Open and the French, but in reality this is a rich time for those of us who love the tennis. There's three ATP tournaments a week at the moment. There was two WTA tournaments last week. Dubai starts this week for the women as well, which is a brilliant tournament. The Fed Cup was on a couple of weeks ago. The Challenger Tour is clicking into gear. There's tennis all over the globe on different surfaces, so you can immerse yourself in the tennis 24 hours a day, it seems like, at the moment. And obviously, alongside that, it's a real treasure trove of stories. We'll be looking into some of those in the next half an hour or so. I only have the one guest this week, unfortunately. But fortunately, it's everyone's favourite. Damien Kust, how are you?
Hello, everyone.
Everyone's favourite, I said.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be. I hope I am. Our host is not so bad himself, so I hope you like him too.
Well, thank you. Now, that's why you're my favourite, because A, you come on every week, and B, because you give me such fantastic compliments like that. I have a question for you. I know I didn't give you one in the running order, but I do have a question for you. It is, where on earth are you today?
I'm actually in Marseille, France, and it's not a coincidence that the Open 13 is just happening here. I'm actually here for the whole week of the event. Today was the first round of qualifying, and I'm excited for the rest of the week. It's a great field there, which we're gonna talk about soon.
Yeah, we'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast. We'll cover all the tennis and the winners that have happened since the Australian Open. But before we leave Marseille for now, you've been to the qualifying today, haven't you?
Yeah.
And tell the listeners, like, you've seen some of the people that you've wanted to see. And when I saw that who you wanted to see, I was like, why on earth did you want to see this guy? So who have you seen today that you've always wanted to see?
It was actually Sergei Stakhovsky, yeah. Is it really a weird choice? I mean, that's a very interesting style of play. That
he's a funky player, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to see him. I love volleying. I absolutely, just love when he serve and volleys, when he just slice approaches. I actually didn't see that much of that today. He was quite overpowered from the baseline by Matthias Bakinger. Lost quite easily, 6-3, 6-4. Couldn't really impose himself on the return, but it was a kind of a goal for me, so I'm happy that I could fulfill it thanks to the website too.
And did you see anyone today that, I know we'll probably talk about like who you think is going to do well in Marseille in the main draw, but did you see anyone today that you thought kind of surprised you in a way?
Maybe not surprised me, because I know the class of these guys, but today, tomorrow, there's going to be a match between Emil Roussevori and Egor Gerasimov. So two of the players that have done really well in recent weeks. And I'm thinking that whoever comes out of this one can definitely make a couple of surprises in the main draw. Especially as we already know that there will be a lucky loser spot. So maybe one of them. Maybe both of them will advance to the main draw. So these are the ones that definitely are to be looked out for if they indeed make it to the main draw.
And in that main draw, we have quite the strong French presence, as there always is in these French ATP tournaments. And that kind of forms the basis of today's quiz question, which obviously you're going to have to tackle on your own today. No help from any of the experts. But it's not a difficult one, this one. I might even ask you to do it in ranking order. So the question is, because you are in France and there's a tournament in France this week, I want you to name all the French male players who are in the top 100 in the ATP rankings.
Right now, okay.
So
that's going to be pretty tough, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, it starts off obviously very relatively easy, but we'll see how we get on. I'll give everyone at home a clue as well. There's 11 to get.
11.
Okay. So 11 men are in the top 100, and that's kind of the task for later on, probably in about half an hour's time, after we go through kind of the news, as it were, and what we've missed in the last couple of weeks since we've had a podcast. So first of all, we're going to talk a little bit about a story that will only really matter in a couple of months' time, but Roger Federer has been in the news with his plans over the clay court season. Obviously, he's given that a miss over the last 2 years at least. And he's made a decision, hasn't he, Damien, about kind of how he's going to plan that clay court season this season?
Well, it started, first of all, there was a rumor that he's going to play Madrid and Rome. But then his agent, Tony Gottsick, actually said in an interview that he is at the moment not planning to play anything besides Roland Garros, which wasn't that surprising given that there was a schedule uploaded on his website before, which only stated Miami and then Roland Garros. Is it the right move? I mean, it depends, because that's probably assuming that Roland Garros is only a way to get himself tuned up for Wimbledon, for Halle, there's actually going to be quite a marathon for him, like Halle, Wimbledon, Olympics, Cincinnati and the US Open. So, for example, in 2018, he said that, Federer said that some of the issues he experienced at Wimbledon and at Halle were because of just, too much, the break between Miami and between the grass season was too long. But you also got to remember that in 2018, he lost in Miami in the second round. So I believe like his final decision will depend a lot on how he does at the Sunshine Double. But I generally think it's definitely the right move. We've seen him last year play Madrid, Rome and Roland Garros, and it's still not like, he can contend for the slam with players like Thiem and Nadal. I mean, Madrid is not the perfect warm-up event for Roland Garros because of its high altitude. It pretty much plays like a hard court at times. That's why we've seen him so successful the last year, for example. Rome is a better option, so I'm sort of expecting him to play Rome if the Sunshine Double ends very early for him. But it's great that he wants to play in Paris. I mean, a lot of fans were delighted to see him after such a long break that he had. He didn't play there for 3 years. So I think it's definitely the right move, and just, take Roland Garros as a way of tuning up his ground strokes, also preparing physically for the most important part of the season for him. So the Wimbledon, the Olympics and US Open.
So last question on this particular topic. A man as great as Roger Federer, who's won so many titles, I can't imagine him ever going into a tournament thinking that he can't win it. But do you actually think he does go into Roland Garros thinking he can't win it? Or do you think he thinks he can win it?
I mean, Federer has shown that he has a lot of confidence issues over the years. I mean, by his interviews, we've heard him a lot of times saying that he doesn't really have a chance to win this event in the past couple of years. Does he really believe that? I think he's not really, optimistic about his chances against Thiem or Nadal, but against pretty much anyone else, he would have a decent chance, I think. So, just go there.
It's worth entering the tournament then.
Yeah, go there, hope the draw opens up.
Yeah, exactly. The draw could open up and injuries could happen. You never know. So it is, obviously worthwhile him entering. Let's move on then. Let's talk about tennis that's been happening. And kind of one man on the ATP side has kind of taken the narrative and taken it his direction. It's a man who's been around for a very long time. But this is the first time he's won two tournaments in a year, I believe. Gael Monfils, he's gone back-to-back, Damien. I didn't see that coming, did you?
Well, it's not that much of a surprise to me, given how well he's been playing since the beginning of the season. We're actually in the middle of February, and the only people he's lost to are the Austrian Open finalists. He lost to Djokovic at the ATP Cup and then to Thiem at the Austrian Open. It's certainly very surprising to me that this is the first time that he's won two titles in a year, because it really feels like he's been around for so long and always fighting for titles.
He won his first title in 2005.
Yeah, like 18-year-old, 19-year-old, something like that. He has been like a crowd favorite for the longest time. So it also feels like everyone's talking about him. So it also feels like he's just, been around for for everywhere, you know, for so many years. And actually that also happens because he shown so much potential from a very early age, right? I'm not sure if everyone remembers that, but he won 3 junior grand slams in 1 year. Mm-hmm. Only losing one match at the US Open to Viktor Troicki. So that was the moment where he was named a future Grand Slam champion. Also because of how long the Frenchmen are waiting for a Grand Slam title since 1983. So they really, you know, just jumped at the opportunities that they saw in Gasquet, in Monfils. And he also had a couple of big runs at the French Open in the beginning of his career. But it never really happened. I believe it's mostly like the health and the mentality that has been failing him throughout the years.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Because like, obviously we talk, all of what you've said there, from that beginning of that time, he should have won a Grand Slam. But he's not even really come close. I can't think of a single Grand Slam where there's always the first week and maybe you think this is going to be the time now. But it was the US Open, wasn't it? Was it last year or the year before where he made it to the quarterfinals and lost to Berrettini?
Last year, yeah. That was a pretty good chance, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just never kind of happened for him. And so he's won. He won in Rotterdam. He also won the week before in Montpellier. And got Vasek Pospisil in the final there, which was an excellent run from Pospisil, who's also actually been playing very well in the last 6 months or so. He beat him 7-5, 6-3 in Montpellier, and then today he's beaten Félix Auger-Aliassime, so he's killing off the Canadian hopes one tournament at a time. He beat him 6-2, 6-4, so kind of relatively routine. I don't know if you saw any of the Rotterdam final. You're probably busy watching Sergei Stakhovsky today, were you? So take much of that in. But fantastic stuff from Monfils, and that puts him firmly into the ATP top 10 at the moment. Let's talk about some other tennis that's been going on. At the same time as Monfils was winning in Montpellier, we saw the ATP Pune and ATP Cordoba finishing, Yuri Vesely winning his first title for 4 years, beating Egor Gerasimov in the final there, 7-6, 5-7, 6-3. We had a bit of a surprise in the doubles in Pune as well, with Oranson and Roncat beating Gerlich and Vasilevsky 10-8 in a champions tiebreak. I'm not an expert in doubles, Damien, but I think that's the first time that I've seen Oranson and Roncat winning a title at this level.
Well, I'm not an expert either, but it was actually the first time seeing Goranson for me. Roncat has been a contender for titles for some time, but with different partners, I think.
And then in Cordoba, we had Christian Garin beating the number one seed there, Diego Schwartzman, 2-6, then 6-4, 6-love. So Garin really got onto a roll there in the final. In the doubles, Demolina and Middlekoop were the victors, beating Meyer and Molteni 6-3, 7-6. So a lot of disappointments there for the home crowd, getting beat in the singles and the doubles finals. A lot of Argentinians there. Did you want to pick up on anyone from that week?
Well, maybe Christian Garin. I mean, winning 3 ATP 250s in 1 year is certainly a big achievement. He comes from Chile, so he obviously likes South America. That's where his biggest victories came on the Challenger Tour. That's where he just won a title. But he also won in Houston and somewhere else in Munich, right? Last season. Munich, was it? Tell me it was Munich. I think so. Anyway,
I'll be able to tell you it was Munich after I've finished the podcast. So that's okay. Not good to you right now.
Well, his forehand is a fantastic weapon on clay. We've also seen him serve great. He didn't really have a big run on clay yet in Masters 1000 events or the Roland Garros. But for example, we've seen him reach a quarterfinal last year at the Rolex Paris Masters in November, and that run was based pretty much on fantastic serving. So he can adapt to different surfaces, but obviously clay will probably stay the one surface that he's gonna be the best at. I definitely hope he can you know, turn his all this success into a great deep run at the Masters or at the Grand Slam this season, because that's where most people notice these guys, right?
Kind of talk about something that happened on the women's side. The Fed Cup was back. I'll just run through the world group scores. So the US got off to a winning start against Latvia, although it was very close because the Latvians made a good comeback there. It was 3-2 to the United States there, and they had a power-packed team. Serena played in that United States team along with Sophia Kenin. So you couldn't get two kind of bigger players at the moment for the States. And to say they only squeezed through, it's probably quite nervy for them. They were at home as well for that match. Netherlands lost to Belarus 3-2 at home. Romania lost as well 3-2 to Russia. Germany swept Brazil in Brazil as well 4-0. Spain beat Japan 3-1. Switzerland beat Canada 3-1. Belgium beat Kazakhstan 3-1. And Slovakia beat Great Britain 3-1 as well. So those teams will progress and then they'll play another round further on. And the ones that lost go into qualifiers to stay in the world group. So that was that, Damien. Obviously, we've got United States, Belarus, Russia, Germany, Spain, Switzerland, Belgium and Slovakia going forward from that first round. Who out of those countries can you see kind of going the furthest? Is there a strong fancy in there for you?
It's a boring answer, but the United States, obviously. I mean, they have the most recent Grand Slam champion. They have, if they have Serena, then they form a very good team. It's also going to depend on how Kenin reacts to winning that title at the Australian Open. Is she going to, you know, have a major dip in her form? But basing on how she played at the Fed Cup, it doesn't look like so. There's also a very dangerous wildcard nation that was invited, right? Czech Republic. It's probably in the past couple of years, it has probably been the most successful nation in the in the Fed Cup, and with the amount of talent that they always have, like Pliskova, Vondroušová, Muchová also as a third one. So they also had great doubles players. So I guess I would kind of see the Czech Republic and the United States as favorites there. It's actually, you know, it's sorted into groups, right?
I'll just talk about these group stages. So those eight teams that qualify for a group stage, which also includes, as you said, the Czech Republic, got Australia in there, France are in there as well, and Hungary, as well as the eight teams that I mentioned and that have won those ties last week. So kind of who can qualify from those groups. And then there's a semi-final and a final stage. Like Czech Republic has done so well in this event for so long now that it's amazing, really, their record. But the number of players that they just get at the top of the game, it's like the quiz question that's posed to you for France on the men's side. You could probably pause.
Yeah, there could be, but
some of the question every time we're writing predictions on WTA, it seems to involve a Czech player, and the strength and depth is just incredible. Like, you're obviously from the Central European kind of area. I'm not sure if you know anything about the development of the kind of the Czech tennis. Is it a massive sport in that country? I'm not that familiar with Czech culture.
I'm not really sure, but I'm definitely a bit irritated by that, actually, because, you know, we are situated next to each other. They have like, what is it, 8 million people, and yet they have so many players in the ATP WTA top 100. Also the ATP, I think, you know, they had Berdych and like Poland has like 4 times more people, and yet we don't really have as many players maybe in the top 1,000.
Czech Republic won the Davis Cup twice as well, didn't they, in the 2010s?
Yeah, of course, 2012 and 13. Honestly, I believe it's mostly due to, I'm not sure what the situation is there, but I believe it's probably due to the federation, like, actively doing something to promote the sport and to support the biggest up-and-coming prospects. I mean, I know it's an issue in Poland, so I guess the situation is probably better there.
Yeah, so Czech Republic could go far, States could go far. Australia got to the final last year with Barty, kind of flying the flag for them. And I think France are the defending champions, which is probably why they've got automatically into that group stage.
Yep.
I'd be surprised if France could retain it. I think it was a bit of a surprise that they won it last year, but did very well to do so. So let's move on to kind of the week that we're just at the end of now. We're still awaiting one or two results. from this week. But we've had the winners of Rotterdam, we talked about Gael Monfils Feast, but we had the winner at Buenos Aires as well, Casper Ruud, has triumphed there. And he was up against Pedro Sousa, wasn't he, in the final, which is a massive run for him.
Yeah, quite a surprise, especially as he was the lucky loser in that event. I mean, Pedro Sousa, of course. Just got a couple of great wins, for example, over Thiago Monteiro in the quarters, and then received a walkover from Diego Schwartzman. But anyway, talking about Casper Ruud, I mean, I think it's a fantastic achievement for him, especially to make it to a new career high ranking of world number 34, beating his father's record. It's obviously a very big thing for Norway as well, because they don't really have a lot of tennis tradition there. The sport is not that popular. There, for example, there will be an ATP Challenger Tour event this year. I think after 20 years or something, after 20 years, there will be an event of the circuit in Norway, in Bergen. So hopefully that can help with the development of tennis there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ruud basically like obliterated everyone on the way to the title.
I know, right?
Besides Juan Ignacio Londero, of course.
Right. So like I was watching that semi-final and Londero was hitting winner after winner and kind of playing Ruud off the court, really. And then served for it at 5-4 in the second set and just completely capitulated. And Ruud won the next... He won the next three games to take the set 7-5 and then went straight away a breakup in the third set. And then there was a heat break. Someone went down in the crowd and Casper Ruud was running around the court, throwing water bottles into the stands and getting a massive round of applause from the Buenos Aires crowd. And then Londero was just looking at him from his chair, obviously giving the evils, like, how have you got so much energy? But obviously, he must have been running on adrenaline because he'd just won the last five games in a row. And Londero thought, I'm going to have to do something about this. So he just turned around and gave a water bottle to the ball boy that was behind him to do the same job. But he couldn't be bothered doing it himself. It wasn't amusing because there was someone down in the crowd and it could have been serious, which is why they stopped playing for a little while. But I just found that little bit of a play quite telling about what adrenaline can do for you and getting momentum can do for you, running around the stadium in 40 degree heat, throwing bottles of water into the crowd. But that's Casper Ruud. So he's, like you say, he's become the highest ranked Norwegian. And let's talk about the final that we don't have the result for yet, but Kyle Edmund, the Briton, has made it to an ATP final. And he'll be playing against Andreas Seppi, which is quite probably an unexpected final from the start of New York. We had Milos Raonic in that draw, the defending champion Riley Opelka and John Isner was in that draw, and it was expected to be kind of a big servers paradise, and certainly Seppi and Edmund have got decent serves, but by no means the biggest on tour. But all of those big scenes seem to go out very early, and we had Jason Jung in the semi-finals, Miomir Kecmanovic was Edmund's opponent in the semi-final, so quite a tournament of shocks, really.
Yeah, of course. There's an opportunity for me to say something good about the Challenger Tour that I won't miss. Andreas Seppi lost in Dallas last week in the second round, so his first match as a seed there, to Yuri Rodionov, who went on to take on the title, and now he's in the final of an ATP 250.
So is that another Czech prospect that you're talking about there?
Wait, come again?
Is Yuri Rodionov, is he another young Czech prospect?
No, he's from Austria.
Austria.
But he's very young, yeah. He's 20, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
But anyway, Seppi, you know, he lost in his first match in a challenger, and now he's in the final of an ATP 250, so clearly the difference in levels is not that big. Anyway, both Seppi and Edmund are, you know, are players whose potential is well known to all of us. They simply have been struggling for a bit. Definitely, I'm very delighted to see Edmund do well, because he's still rather young. He has been struggling to find his ways in a bit. I mean he is also a very much a rhythm player, let's say. He can go on very bad strings of losses, but when he's at his best, he definitely has the potential to win ATP titles. I'm not sure if the finals started already. No, it hasn't, right? It's in 30
minutes. 10 o'clock, I think, in your, my time. And but yeah, Edmund has quite a high ceiling. Like, he almost qualified for the ATP finals in 2018, and he's made it to Grand Slam semifinals, which Andreas Seppi hasn't managed to do, from my knowledge. And so he's definitely the player with the highest ceiling. I watched the Seppi semi-final last night, and he kind of pulled Jason Young all over the court. He's got a decent enough all-court game. But that'll be an interesting final tonight. And if you're listening to this podcast after the final's finished, then I'll pop the results on the blurb underneath the podcast, so that people are aware of kind of what happened in that final. I've done with the predictions for New York all week, and I've gone for an Edmund win, so it'll obviously be Seppi who emerges victorious from that one. Actually, no, that's not fair. I've done okay on the New Yorks this week. You know what? My first four predictions on the website were the qualifying round on day one of New York, okay? And I got the first four exactly right to the exact set score as well. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever.
Someone actually followed me on Twitter and said, "Are you the guy that has done the New York predictions?" And
I've seen it. That was funny. I didn't know why he asked you for that. I thought maybe he's gonna blame you for losing his money or something. But
yeah, right. That's what I thought as well.
That was actually a compliment. Nice.
I didn't respond to him because I wanted to check the results against my predictions first before I even replied to the guy. And if you look down this, I mean, this is kind of completely off topic, but I think it's interesting. If you scroll down that guy's Twitter feed, it's all just insults to people for losing him money. So I don't think I'm going to keep him as a friend on Twitter, as a connection on Twitter, for very long, because if he's still following my, he actually asked me for what my opinion was of the next match that was on court, and it was Damir Zuma against might have been Seppi, actually. It was Seppi, yeah. Somewhere against Seppi in the first round. And I said, I can't see Seppi winning this. I don't think his ground strokes are going to penetrate enough, right? So, and obviously Seppi's made it all the way to the flat final, so I hope he really didn't take that advice very well. Although Damir Zuma had two match points in that match, and he served for it as well. So, you know, that's tennis for you. Anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about some women's tennis. We had St. Petersburg finished this morning, and Huahin finished earlier in the morning as well. Magda Linette winning that one against Leonie Kung from Switzerland. That was quite a straightforward victory for Magda Linette in the end. And then in St. Petersburg, Kiki Bertens won a WTA Tour title, and she beat the massively talented Elena Rybakina 6-1, 6-3, and I predicted that was going to go three sets. I thought it was going to be incredibly tight, but Bertens just came out and kind of dismantled Rybakina, really. If you want to pick up on that, like, Rybakina, she's, I think that was her third or fourth final already this season. She's come from just outside the 200, just inside the top 200 this time last year. She's now going to be inside the top 20 for the first time. But Kiki Bertens is equally as impressive. Like, she's gone 9-2 now this season. And this is before we even head into clay court season, which everyone kind of thinks is her best surface. So what do you think about those two players that contested that final? Oh, actually, you probably want to speak about Magda Linette, will you not? I don't even know.
It's fine. I mean, okay, so where to start? Okay, so Magda Linette won her second title. It was a pretty weak WTA international draw. I mean, these tournaments really differ in quality. Something that someone pointed out to me was that in her first title last year, so it was the Bronx Open, she beat six top 100 players on the way. And here in Huahin, she didn't have to beat a single one. And it's the same points, probably a little less money, but I'm not even sure about that. I mean, Magda really likes the conditions in Asia, definitely. She always plays these small Asian events, so I guess it was just a matter of time before she won one of these. She's also going to make a career high ranking. I'm also very happy to see Leonie King do well. She was in Wimbledon Juniors final 2 years ago, and kind of hasn't really come out of the lower tiers of the game, but hopefully this run will allow her to.
Yeah, she came all the way through qualifying as well, so she won six or seven matches to get all the way to the final, so well done her, really.
Yeah, and as to Bertens and Rybakina, I mean, I don't think this week really changes anything. I think of Bertens, I mean, she's had excellent results on hard courts before. She's won Cincinnati 2 years ago, taking the final over Simona Halep. So, you know, I think right there is a confirmation that she can be a contender for hard court slams even. I like her game best on clay. I think the forehand is, you know, all the top spin on it is designed to play well on this surface, but she's never really done well in hard court slams before. But I think with how open the women's game is, and also how there's no best of three, best of five difference in women's game, if you win Cincinnati, then you can certainly win a slam on hard. And as to Rybakina, the most like appealing thing about her, I think, is the consistency with which she beats lower ranked players. I mean, she's barely losing to anyone who's ranked under her. I mean, as you said, she was around the top 200 at the same time last year. She's had a really impressive run, and she's also done it a lot through ITF tournaments, not through the main tour. Then she won a main tour event, but still had to qualify for the US Open, which she did, but they lost in the first round there. But since that, she's been absolutely flawless. It's kind of, you know, it's not maybe a weird thing to say, but that kind of reminds me of Ash Barty. I mean, not in the way that not in the way that she her game is anything like her, but Barty was also for like a year or so was the player who simply torn down everyone outside of the top stars. And I'm not saying Rybakina will have something a meteoric rise like Barty soon, but she also has a lot of months right now left to gather points, because she was playing the ITF tour at this time last season. So who knows? I mean, has she advanced to the top 20 this week? I think so, right?
So I was looking at the live rankings before the final, and she was already in 19, I think. So she'll probably be 19 going into this week now, which is brilliant, really. Like you say, she's only going to pick up more points now she's going to keep playing these decent level WTA Tour events. I was writing the prediction for that final, and in my research, I found that she'd won 76% of her matches in the last 12 months. That's some going, that, isn't it? I know you're saying like she was playing ITF Tour and then probably like lower level WTA international events, but still 76% is really good. In terms of where she's going next week, I don't think she's in the Dubai draw, but she certainly won't be going to Hungary. It was meant to be WTA. In previous years, it's been WTA Budapest. But then there's been some kind of massive mix-up in the Hungarian...
Rybakina is going to Dubai. She got a special exempt, you know, the one for players who do well. The place for players
she's
who
just playing well Sophia Kenyon.
The previous week, yeah. She's going to play Kenyon. So that's a first round match.
Good match.
Look out for, yeah.
But like, what's your opinion on this like Hungary situation? So it was going to be Budapest, and then they passed it to Debrecen, and Debrecen are like, I don't know what's going on here, and they've had to cancel the tournament, and it wasn't even told to the players that it was going to be cancelled until in the middle of the Australian Open, I think it was.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, the WTA is not my favorite organization in the world. I mean, the web, everything they do, like the website, this situation, Jesus. I mean, I have a statement from them here, and it actually says that the event in Debrecen will, I'm not even sure how to read Debrecen, okay, but it will not be held due to unanticipated complications in securing the venue. And when you read it, like, okay, yeah, it happens. But then you find out that they didn't even ask the people, you know, the people who govern the arena they wanted to have it in. They didn't really confirm that with anyone. They just, you know, they just decided that we're organizing the tournament there and never really asked anyone if it's possible. I mean,
it's like having your birthday party at a venue, and then you basically decide that you're going to have it somewhere, and then you tell them that you're having it there and they're like, wait a minute, we've already got like a birthday party going on that week. And you just feel stupid then because you've already invited everybody. And then, well, you could, like, and then you don't even tell the people that you've invited until a couple of weeks before. It's ridiculous. It doesn't
look like they feel stupid. I mean, all the comments, all the statements are like, you know, sorry, not sorry, something like that.
Yeah, all the players are pretty sorry. The ones that had planned to be there, and there's a hell of a lot of them that had planned that into their schedules to go to qualifying, and then obviously maybe planning on being in the main draw. Anyway, let's talk about what is going to be happening, and that's the Dubai duty-free tennis championships, as they call it. I think it's the 20th year that they've had this tournament there. And to be fair to this tournament, they seem to have organised quite a lot of the top players to kind of make it there. Simona Halep's number one seed, Karolina Pliskova's there as number two seed. We've also got Belinda Bencic, Sofia Kenin, Garbiñe Muguruza, who's now got seeding because it's Kiki Bertens, isn't it, that's pulled out of this event late on. Arina Sabalenka is number seven seed. Got Elena Svitolina as well. A couple of interesting wild cards as well, which we should probably mention. Ons Jabeur has got a wild card, which I think is really good from this tournament because of her Australian Open run, and did so much for. I know she's Tunisian, but she kind of represented the whole of the Arabic kind of region. So good on them for getting her a wild card, and she'll play Alison Risk in the first round. But we've also got Kim Clijsters, who's got a wild card, and this is the first tournament that she's kind of going to be playing in since she announced her comeback, and she's drawn to play Garbiñe Muguruza now. She was originally meant to play Kiki Bertens, but that withdrawal has meant that Muguruza has kind of filled that spot. So where do we kind of start from there? How do you think, let's start with Clijsters, because that probably is the biggest story in a way, a multiple-time Grand Slam champion coming back. How do you think she's going to do? Do you have any idea? Because I'm not sure I do.
Not sure I do either, but I mean, I'm sorry to any Clijsters fans. Maybe I am a Clijsters fan, but anyway, I definitely do not believe that she'll win. But, it's just her first match back after a very long break. I think just taking a couple of games and definitely, seeing how she does in rallies, that's gonna be the most important thing here. I mean, she's obviously been practicing, but the match situations are way different. The muscles are much more tight. The intensity is probably just way different than you can have in training, and this is gonna be a huge test for her. But probably not in the sense that she might win this. If she would, that would be like a miracle, honestly. I'm not sure, for example, what the odds are for her win against Muguruza,
no,
but
I
imagine they have to be pretty high, and rightfully so.
I just literally, just before I started recording this, I was writing the predictions for first round in Dubai, and I finished on Clijsters and Muguruza, and I was just thinking to myself, Muguruza obviously famously peaks for those Grand Slams, and he's kind of hot and cold, and I bet she really doesn't fancy this match at all, coming off the back of what is obviously a very good performance in Australia. I bet she'd much rather have played, someone a bit more lower key, where it isn't going to be much of an event, and I can see Clijsters troubling her. Although it seems ridiculous, we've no idea what her level's going to be coming back. I mean, I predicted Muguruza to win in two, but I still predict a couple of kind of heart in mouth moments for the Spaniard in that one. I just sense she's that kind of character. Let's have a look at the rest of the draw. Is there anyone that you particularly kind of look at and think that they could have a deep run in this tournament?
Well, I haven't noticed it before we started this, but. Well, Kenin Rybakina, that's a first round match. I mean, whoever comes out of that is gonna be definitely, in great shape. That's definitely what I'll have my eyes for in that draw. I definitely want to see where Muguruza's at too. I mean, she hasn't played since that Australian Open, has she? She hasn't. I don't think she
no,
has.
No,
sure. So that's gonna be definitely interesting to see if she can keep up that great level. We've seen her struggle with consistency. Probably the Clijsters match is not gonna tell us much, but another one against Jastrzębska or a qualifier definitely will. There are some amazing players in the qualifying. I mean, Julia Gergas was the first seed, so the qualifiers are almost just as good as the main draw players there. Kristina Mladenovic. I mean, that's
there's some really good depth to that, like this kind of crop of women's players at the moment. There's not maybe the like kind of top stars that you get on the ATP tour, but the depth is just getting deeper and deeper, in my opinion. There's so many players that I could pick out of this draw that I think have a chance at a deep run. I'd love to see Markéta Vondrousova come back to some top level of form, and she's only really kind of feeling her way back. She obviously made it to the French Open semi-finals last year and will be looking to kind of defend those ranking points, but also maybe go one further at this year. I agree with you about the Sofia Kenin, Elena Rybakina match. Whoever wins that, that's in the Pliskova section. And like Pliskova in the kind of regular tour events is really difficult to get through as well. So, it's a tricky old heat, to be fair. And if anyone picks the winner out of that one first time, then fair play to them. But I think good for the WTA Tour that they've got an event with such depth, and it'll be interesting to see how that develops through the week. Keep looking at the Last Word on Tennis website for that, although I'm on predictions this week, so maybe take what you read there with a pinch of salt. I can promise that there's going to be a lot of research done and a lot of interesting facts and figures on the articles. Can't predict that I'm going to get them all right, but you know, I'll give it my best shot. That's Dubai. There's no Hungarian tournament, as we already said, so we'll move on to the ATP, where there's another three tournaments this week. So one in France, I wonder who's going to be there. There's one in Rio, and there's one in Delray Beach as well. So plenty of tennis for us to get stuck into. Let's talk about Marseille then, Damien. You're there. You're on the ground, so to speak. Are you there kind of reporting for us, or are you just there as a vacation sort of thing?
I will be reporting from tomorrow. Maybe I'll still write something today, but it doesn't look like so given the late hour, but definitely reporting from tomorrow. When it comes to the event, I mean, I think the field is super even. I mean, the top players, the top four seeds are actually Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Goffin and Shapovalov, and neither of them has really been doing great in the past couple of weeks. There are many dangerous unseeded floaters, like Yannick Sinner, for example, can play his second round against Medvedev if he comes through a qualifier, so that would obviously be an absolute blockbuster. The same for Cilic. If he comes out and play and defeats a qualifier, then he'll also play Shapovalov. Tomorrow there's a fantastic match between Mikhail Limmer and Richard Gasquet, and the winner of that will play Stefanos Tsitsipas. So that's one to look out for too. Hurkacz and Pospisil might meet in the second round. We'll see if Felix Auger-Aliassime plays after that Rotterdam run. But he's also going to be one to look out for if he can keep the stamina levels high. I mean, the field is so even that really it's tough to say anything. I'm just excited to see all the close matchups, and hopefully all of them won't disappoint. Will live up to the expectations.
Yeah, I wanted to pick out you've gone through the draw there. Marin Cilic is one of real interest to me this week. I thought he looked very good in Australia. It was only a couple of years ago where I was predicting him to win a Grand Slam. And obviously he's already won one. He won the US Open back in, is it 2013 now? I can't even remember. 14. It was that long ago. 2014. And it'd be great to see. He had a terrible 2019. He couldn't really string two wins together. It was really kind of not depressing, because I don't care that much for the lad, but it was good to see him like make a decent run. Vasco Pospisil is another one. We mentioned him obviously making it to the final of Montpellier, so he's obviously stuck around and wanted to play in France again. and maybe that'll inspire him, although he's up against your mate Hubie, possibly in the second round, so I wouldn't want him to beat your pal. Although, listeners, if you remember, listeners, in the first podcast that we did, Damien just kind of told us how much he really didn't like Haircatcher's game and how rubbish he was.
No, I didn't say I didn't like it. I mean, I said that I see a lot of problems with his game, which I still see, but I also see that he's improving. He's definitely working on the stuff that's been bothering his rise to the top. And maybe one day I'm gonna say, okay, that's good. You've got a great game.
Seeded this week, so he's doing well.
Yeah, he's seeded. Yeah, great.
Seeded 8 this week, so keep an eye out for Damien's reports from Marseille. Very jealous that you get to go down to the south of France to do that. Do you know where I'm going to be reporting for Elwas Tennis next week? Do you know where I'm going to be?
Well, you told me, so I do.
So yeah, I'll tell everybody else. I'm going to be in Sunderland, RTF Sunderland. Everyone, I'm sure you're all at home thinking, where the hell's that? It's in the northeast of England. I'll tell you who was there last year who won it, Harriet Dart. So, we still get some decent players. Laura Robson was there last year. It's where she got yet another injury. Tournament.
Okay, I thought it's men's. Okay.
No, there's men's as well.
There's men's as well, okay.
Yeah, there's, I can't remember who won the men's draw last year. Anyway, enough about RTF Sunderland, although listen out for some special kind of podcast content that I'm going to try and get from there to kind of see what life is like down at the RTF level and kind of where people get their inspiration to carry on playing at that lower level form and kind of what the aspirations of the tennis players on the RTF are, whether they're still thinking of kind of Grand Slam glory and how they're kind of building towards that. So should be interesting, contrast.
That's what I thought. Emil Roussevori actually won No, that was in April, so there's a different ATF Sunderland, okay?
Because I
remember Roussevori won in Sunderland, but it's not that event, okay? Never mind.
That's a prime example, though. Like, obviously, Emil Roussevori winning in Sunderland last year, and then, the winner of RTF Sunderland next week could be the next one kind of breaking through into the top ranks. So that's kind of what I'm going to go there for and see if I can find out some interesting information about that one. But kind of going back to this week and on the ATP tour on the other side of the world, we've got Delray Beach and the 500 event in Rio, which Dominic Thiem's turned up for as top seed and a very, very strong favourite there, Damien.
In Rio, of course. I mean, I don't really like the decision to play there from his perspective. I mean, obviously his favorite surface is clay, but he's defending a lot of points in the Sunshine Doubles soon. Well, yeah, a lot of points because he went out early in Miami, but he won in Indian Wells, so that's over 1,000 points to defend. And I'm not sure I really like that decision to go to Rio to train on clay to possibly play a few matches there. Like, I think that the prize, the 500 points is not that much at the moment for team to really go for that move. I mean, he's had a couple of years before where his scheduling was heavily criticized, because he would end up running out of steam in the second half of the season. I think there was one where he won like 40 matches until Wimbledon and the 9 after Wimbledon maybe. So, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously a big favorite there, but it's not like there aren't any good players on his route. There's Christian Ruud possibly in the quarterfinals.
I don't think Christian's going to be playing.
Kasper, of course. Okay. Well, Kasper might not be playing either, but we'll see.
Kasper Ruud obviously is the other seed in his section. I've got an interesting stat for you on the Rio Open. No number one seed has won it since Nadal in 2014. So the last 5 years, there's been no number one seed winning.
It's been team for the most part, right? Like in last year, it was definitely team. I'm not sure if...
Team won it 2 years ago, I think, but I think maybe that must have been the season where... somebody else had obviously, I don't know if it was Nadal himself, went over again.
He won it 3 years ago, and there was Nishikori was the top seed.
Nishikori, yeah. So that's an interesting one. So he's obviously going to go out there and try and break that statistic. He's got a very easy wild card draw in the first round, so he should be able to ease himself into conditions there. But this is the thing about the Golden Swing, isn't it? That it gives those clay court specialists kind of two seasons to build up their ranking points. And it has brought on some players onto the tour, like Christian Garin, who we were talking about earlier, Juan Ignacio Londero, kind of got his kind of big break through the Golden Swing. And it is still, I think it's quite an interesting part of the season, really, to see some clay court tennis early on in the year and kind of get maybe some South American players onto the tour and get them over to Europe as well, give them enough ranking points to make it worthwhile for them. So I'm all for these kind of three events. I'm not sure, like you say, that it's the wisest idea for Dominic Thiem to come over and play it, but it's an ATP 500 tournament, and if he does come through and win it, then you know that's another 500 ranking points and a prestigious title, and also kind of extends his brand to that area of the world even stronger than, I know he was champion there 3 years ago, but now he's kind of, I think we could all say, he's a bigger star now than he was then.
I think if he makes the semis, actually, if he makes the semis, he'll be the new number three in the ATP rankings. So maybe that's also a goal he can achieve there.
And in this kind of like era of the big three, the big four, if you go back to when Andy Murray was there, like that attaining world number three is no mean feat. So, yeah, I think that's probably one of the big reasons why he is there, to be honest. But let's talk a little bit about Delray Beach. Probably maybe the lesser of the three events this week, but still worth a little discussion about. It's one where outsiders have done particularly well in the last few years. I remember Rajiv Ram making the final of this a few years ago on a massive massive price, and we had Radu Albot, I think is the defending champion here, beating Dan Evans in the final, I seem to remember, last year. And he's back in the draw, he's seeded eight, he's playing Jack Sock, who's been given a wild card. You know, I think maybe that's a good time to pass it over to yourself. Jack Sock gets a wild card for Delray Beach, happy with that?
No, I'm not. And honestly, I mean, I could do with the New York one last season, last week, because, you know, just maybe his attitude has changed. Maybe he's now a new man. But if he, honestly, I believe that after what he did last season, like the last two or three matches that he, you know, just came to challengers, and after he lost the first set, just decided to quit the match. I mean, I think after such stuff, also, it's not like it was only the injury that hampered him in the past two seasons. I mean, the injury got him out of play for 6 months, but then he was also, like, you know, unfit to play. 2018, he was absolutely terrible for the whole year, besides the Paris Masters, where he reached the quarters. I think that's still his last singles win, besides Laver Cup. I think it's over Malek Aziri there. And after, like, how dismotivated he looked, like, I would force him to simply, if say, you know, if he wants to come back to the main tour, start from the ITF, play an ITF or two, then you can play a challenger, and if you're playing well enough, then sure. I mean, it's the only way for him, I guess, because, you know, just grabbing some weird wild cards once in a while, he's not gonna, you know, get the right rhythm, get enough play time to play himself into form, or other way is to just play doubles full time, which we see he could do, but he said himself that he would rather quit tennis than do so. So I'm definitely not.
Seems like that's what he. It seems like that's what he decided to do at the start of 2019. He went the calendar year without winning a single ranking event match. Like you say, he only won in the Laver Cup, which kind of says it all about him, doesn't it? Like he just shown up for that kind of glossy exhibition and turned up and won a game, but what, can't be bothered putting it in for the rest of the year to win any ranking of like points. It's, yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm not a fan of them giving the wild card, and to be honest, I hope he gets beat off LOL Albot as well. Nick Kyrgios is number one seed at Delray Beach. Milos Raonic is there for the second week in a row in the US. Is number two seed. Taylor Fritz, number three. Riley Opelka, four. John Millman, five. Hugo Humbert, number six. Adrian Mannarino, number seven. And Radu Albot, as we said, number eight as well. It just looks like a tournament where I don't trust any of those players to go on and do well. And it wouldn't surprise me if an unseeded player or even a qualifier or even a wild card, probably not Jack Sock, goes on and wins it. Brandon Nakashima is someone that I wanted to pick up on. He's been given the other main draw, well, one of the other main draw wild cards. Really good junior player from the US. Yeah, and he's been making waves on the Challenger Tour recently.
Yeah, of course, that's a fantastic wild card right there. I mean, that's how you should use them. And not give them to Jack Sock. I mean, just a young, up-and-coming player who showed a lot of promise in the past couple of months on the Challenger Tour. So I'm very excited to see his breakthrough. He's going to play against Vesely, so that's kind of weird too, because I don't think Vesely has really played these American events in a while. So that's going to be a very exciting first match to follow. I think it should be rather close. I mean, Vesely won a tour-level title just a week ago, but you know, we all know how the field in Pune looked like, so that's gonna be a huge test for both of them. Also, another wild card is what really interests me. I mean, Ryan Harrison has also been out of the game for a while. He also, like Sock, he got an absolute ton of wild cards in his career, but at least he's showing, you know, that he wants to come back. I mean, last week he played very well at Cleveland Challenger, got two wins over Sebastian Hofner and someone whom I can't remember now. But anyway, he's at least showing that he wants to come back, and he's playing Damir Dzumhur in the first round, so I imagine that should be close too.
Yeah, he's got a chance there. Right, so, you know, we're basically saying that Delray Beach could be won by almost anybody in the draw, really. It wouldn't surprise me if any single... it wouldn't surprise me if Nick Kyrgios went out in the first round to Tommy Paul, who's obviously another good young American talent. We went through the top seeds there. That probably gives you some answers if you were paying attention at home as to the quiz question that I set quite a while ago now, a bit more than half an hour that I suggested at the time. But we'll go through these quiz answers now and see how Damien kind of gets on with this. I said there was 11 Frenchmen, but that did include the person who kind of inspired the quiz, which is Germain Fee. So I already said was ranked number 9 now. So there's another 10. So apologies if I misled.
You included Monfils, okay.
I included Monfils in that 11.
So do I have to do this in order or not?
Well, I mean, we'll give it a shot going in order if you can.
But it's probably going to fall apart soon, yeah. So Monfils is obviously the first one. Then we'll have Benoit Paire.
Benoit Paire is correct, number 20.
And then, I mean, Puy has really lost like a lot of spots lately, so I'm going to go for Jo-Wilfried Tsonga, but...
Jo-Wilfried Tsonga is there. He's not the next in the queue, but I'll give you a Tsonga.
Okay, so probably the next one around that will be Hugo Humbert, actually.
Hugo Humbert is number 44. There is one above him, though.
Okay.
They kind of come in pairs, it's weird. But so you got Monfils pair, and then a gap, then Humbert at 44. I think Tsonga's 52. I've not written that one down for some reason.
Ah, because he also fell a lot, because he won, what was it, Montpellier last year? Or something like that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, 47.
So now we'll have Gilles Simon, I suppose.
Gilles Simon is at 58. There is someone between Tsonga and Gasquet. Oh, I'll just give one away there. Tsonga and Simon.
Gasquet. I wanted to say Gasquet anyway, because I actually, you know, it's kind of cheating, but it's not actually. But because I'm at the event in Marseille, I actually checked the entry list many times before coming here. So I remember Gasquet with like 60 or 61 or whatever it was.
Yeah, he's currently 57 in the live rankings.
Okay, so we have six right now?
Yeah.
So I already said Luca Puy. I guess he'll be somewhere around there.
Luca Puy, number 62. So he's the next one down, yeah.
Four left. Okay, so that one I also know because of the entry list, but he withdrawn actually. So Jeremy Chardy.
Jeremy Chardy is number 64, yeah.
And that's where it gets tougher.
Okay, I may have made a mistake. There's one more, I think. Yeah, okay. So there's four more to cap. Sorry.
One more that is in Marseille, I think will be, but that's probably not going to be the next one on the list, but it's, I'm not even sure how to read it, but it's Grégoire Barrère.
That's right, Grégoire Barrère, I would say. Number 89, yeah. So he's in the list as well, yeah. We've got one that you've not got, who was third on the list at number 42. Other than that, you've got a couple of ones in the 70s.
Yeah. That's embarrassing to I don't know, number 42, Frenchman. It's obviously someone I know, but...
Left-handed, I think he is.
Well, I got another left-handed Frenchman, but he's not that high. Corentin Moutet. Yeah.
Corentin Moutet, number 77. So now we're looking forward. And this other guy at number 79, he's a fantastic doubles player. Probably the best in the world.
Okay, he's, he got it. Pierre Gerber.
Yeah. And then this guy, I think he's playing at Delray Beach. I think I just read his name out a minute ago. Yeah, he's seventh seed at Delray Beach.
We talked about Hugo Humbert, so yeah. Are you talking about him?
Nope.
No, one more. Ah, I know. Okay, Adrian Manarino. I don't think you read his name. I don't recall at least.
Yeah. Well, by the way, seventh seed at Delray Beach. So that's all of them. Gael Monfils, Benoit Paire, Adrian Manarino, Hugo Humbert, Jean-Wilfried Tsonga, Richard Gasquet, Gilles Simon, Luca Puy, Jeremy Chardy, Corentin Moutet, Pierre-Hugues Herbert, and Grégoire Barrère. The next French player on the list is 120, and that's Antoine.
Can I guess?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no. I wanted to guess him because I also know his ranking from the entry list to Marseille.
Yeah, he's got the wild card, hasn't he, in the main draw. So.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to like kind of pick up on with that list, like when I was going through it just before the pod, if I was to describe that list in one word, it's old.
You know, it's old at the beginning, but you know there's Barrère, Antoine Huang, or however you read it, Moutet, Herbert. No, Herbert is actually old. I mean, he looks so young that I always confuse.
28.
I always think he's like 23 or something because that's how he looks. He has that baby look. But
they had three of the final four in Australia in the boys' singles, and I know that you don't know if you saw Arnaud Cazaux today.
I saw Arthur Cazaux. He played Denis Novak. It was like, you know, a lesson pretty much, but he showed some premise. I'm hoping Harold Maillot, he's going to play Gilles Simon either on Tuesday or on Wednesday, that he can maybe show something more. He won that final at the Australian Open.
So they do have some talent coming through, and it's about time there was a massive changing of the guard there. Like you say, they're still looking for that men's Grand Slam singles champion. Was it Henri Lecomte in 83?
Lecomte didn't win a slam. He was in the finals like twice or something. Yeah. But Yannick Noah won the 1983 Roland Garros. Yeah.
And that's the last time. Right, so they're still looking for it. At least we had Andy Murray. I wonder who they're going to have. Right, thanks for chatting to us. I know that you're kind of on holiday in Marseille, and now it's 10:15 in the evening, and you want to go and get some French beer. So I'll let you go off and get that now, and I'll speak to you again soon, mate.
Thanks.
We'll ride off into the night, the air is clear, the time is right, feels so high, coming down, clouds are foaming all around. Take your time, fill it up. drinking gin from a paper cup. We've got all of